The State Department is currently involved in increasing its presence in Iraq. It's going to be moving more civilians into Iraq as the military withdraws there. We're also expanding our civilian presence in Afghanistan. So they need to make sure they've got people that are got the right skill sets. They're going to be managing our efforts over there.
And so, essentially, one of the interesting parts of this is you find that the State Department, they've been doing this for a long time, and yet you found that they don't have a systemic, comprehensive process for assessing what they're doing. It kind of shocked me because, as I said, it's not like they just started this process.
Yeah, I think our main concern is that they need to establish a clear set of requirements for all their employees. I think this is particularly true in if we have a budget-constrained environment. They need to decide what's the most important requirements that need to be met so that they can prioritize their training. And we found that they've got a sort of an ad hoc process in the way they do it now. We'd like to see something where they are much more systematic in the way they approach it and that they clearly identify the requirements that are minimum requirements for all their employees.
So almost in a much more comprehensive way, say, hold on, here are the skills that a State Department employee at each level needs to have, and then tie the training to that?
Absolutely. That we think they need to link the requirements based on the whatever the job is that their employees are responsible for. We also need to look at it from a career development perspective because they have a lot of relatively younger employees that have joined the Foreign Service, and they need to develop a plan over time so that people have a career path and they develop the right kind of skill sets as they move forward.
Why don't they have that kind of comprehensive plan in place? That seems like a logical way of doing it.
Yeah, I think, again, they do have a set of plans, but they tend to be somewhat bifurcated. They have a set of plans for the Foreign Service, but they don't have a clear set for the Civil Service, as an example. So what we want them to do is to link all of their requirements for all of their workforce, their people that work overseas, their Foreign Service officers, and their Civil Service officers, so that they can then prioritize where they need to make the major investments in the training area. And so that's something that they just need to link it all together. And I should mention that the State Department itself has recognized the need to do this. They just haven't gone about it in a way that in our view, is comprehensive and systematic.
And one of the areas that you say that the State Department needs to work on is essentially a way of demonstrating demonstrating value of this training, essentially.
Yeah, well, that gets to the part where they need to evaluate the value, you know, the training itself. They currently do surveys. They're primarily training satisfaction surveys about whether employees are satisfied with the training, which is fine. But they need to go beyond that. They need to also look in terms of, are the people really getting the quality of training that they need in order to execute their jobs? This is particularly true in the foreign language area, something that we had reported on a year ago that they had major shortfalls in. And they really, you know, we need to have people that are overseas that can communicate with the environment that they're working under. So these are the kind of things that, again, that we've recommended that they address. And for the most part, they've agreed with us.
And a lot of money spent on this. One of the surprising parts, $255 million spent just in fiscal 2010 on this training. This is a lot of money.
It's a lot of money, and it's as we noted in our report, the amount of money we've invested in training has expanded since 2006. And it's likely that they'll be asking for more money as I mentioned, they're going to be taking over key responsibilities in Iraq and Afghanistan, and they're going to need to make sure that the people they send there have the right skill sets, as I mentioned earlier. So the investment they're making here is significant, and if we're in a budget-constrained environment, they really need to prioritize the training to make sure that the top key requirements are being met.
And it does seem to me, I mean, we always hear the stories where the first thing that gets cut in the budget is training. At the State Department, you can't really afford to do that, no pun intended, I guess.
Yeah, that's been an issue in the past. I mean, particularly in the case where they've had staffing shortages overseas, and if they have a decision between filling a position and versus sending a person to training, they're generally going to fill the position first because they feel that they need to have the people on the ground. Ideally, those people would have all the training before they go, but Certainly in the past, they haven't been able to achieve that.
The you looked a little bit at the structure of the Foreign Service Institute, which does most of these. Is that organization well positioned, well almost organized to carry out this pretty significant task?
Yeah, the Foreign Service Institute. Frankly, we had a lot of positive things to say about the way they're organized and the way that they. Sort of the comprehensive sets of training they have available. I think we identified in classroom training alone, they've got over 700 courses here in Washington. On a global basis, they've got over 2,000 courses. So they have broad coverage. They cover a lot of different areas. It's not just foreign language training. That's their primary skill set that they're trying to impart in the Foreign Service. But they have a lot of other technical training that they provide. And for the most part, we don't have any criticisms in the way that they're organized to deal with it.
One of the interesting charts you had in there was distance learning. They're really using distance learning, which seems just ripe for how this the challenge is facing, particularly the State Department. And I was interested to see as many people using that it just seems like a great way of doing it.
Yeah, they've expanded the use of distance learning. One of the things we wanted them to do as part of their assessment that we call for is to look at sort of the cost effectiveness of that particular delivery mechanism versus the cost of classroom training. Certainly to do the training for their people overseas, they're going to have to use distance learning. They can't afford to have classroom training at 250 posts overseas. They just don't have the money for that. So distance learning seems to be a viable mechanism for them to use, and what we would like them to do is to look at that particular mechanism to see how it could fit in their overall requirements, because they may be able to get more bang for the buck using distance learning than classroom training.
While you looked at State Department, it seems like particularly the recommendation about ensuring that that you're getting your bang for your training buck. And that you demonstrate returns on that investment, returns on the initiatives that you're doing, that seems true for every agency across government, particularly these days.
Yeah, I think absolutely. I mean, I should add that the sort of the criteria that we used here are best practices of training for the federal government as a whole. That here in GAO we have a group that focuses on those kind of things, and. Certainly, the State Department's not much different than other agencies in terms of the need to develop the right kind of requirements. Where they differ is that a large part of the workforce is operating overseas in different types of environments, so they have to obviously adjust the requirements to the environments they work in.
So if there's one thing that folks, that feds across the government should take away, could take away from this report, it would be...
Well, I think what's important is that people get the basic training they need to get to do their jobs. I mean, at the end of the day, we don't want to be sending people, particularly overseas and in hostile environments, into a situation where they don't have the basic fundamental skill sets. That, at a minimum, we need to make sure that our people are properly prepared, because they can't do their jobs unless they are, and also in some places they may be at risk. So it's really important that the basic training be provided, and that the right kind of skill sets are identified for the people that we're going to be asking to go into harm's way in some of the places we're sending them.
Very nice. Mr. Ford, anything I didn't ask you about that I should have?
No, actually, these are really good questions. If you've read the report, we have a lot of positive things to say about the State Department. They really are trying to do the right kind of things, but at the end of the day, it's like everything else. They got to prioritize what's important, and the only way they can do that is they gotta take a top-down view of their total training program and decide what's really most important, and then put the investment into those areas.
And as I kept reading it, the challenge of doing this on a global basis, it's challenging anyway to train the amount of people, 66,000 people.
Yeah.
Then you throw that on the world platform, and that becomes very challenging.
It's very challenging. And the other thing I want to point out, they're working increasingly in more hazardous locations, places where it's dangerous to work and security is difficult. So, like I said, particularly for the junior staff, they gotta teach them enough basic skill sets so that when they go into these hostile environments, you know, they can get something done and not feel like, you know, they're constantly being threatened and that they can't get anything done. So that's why the training is really important in my view, especially in those kind of places.